CD 3.
Excerpt from the Notebooks of Leonard Aquirm. Consideration of the Great Bird. That a man may fly to the edges of the world and beyond, I find that if this instrument be well made and hurled with sufficient force over the endless rim, it will put a ring around the world, and the first flight of the great bird to the summit of Monte Celesti will fill the universe with wonder. The cabin for the crew is sealed against egress of air. The cabin may detach and float should the great bird land in the sea. Should I add extra dragons to allow it to fly home alone should this arise? Memory to self, no. The fixed wings of wood and canvas are contrived to change their shape in accordance with the wishes of the steersman. When the bird finds itself within the wind, it can sustain itself above it without beating its wings. By means of capstans and strings under tension, my wings will take any shape desired, both for gliding and stooping de plano, when the wings will be in folded position, the better to countenance the resistive forces of the air. There are to be cradles for dragons, for the propulsion caused by the flames thereof. These pods allow steering through the thin air during our passage around the world. I recall my pleasure upon seeing a fish eagle stoop upon a salmon in a lake, and then, upon rising again, turn the salmon in its talons so that the head of the salmon was facing forwards. For it demonstrates that the air and water are, in their currents and pressures, both fluids of a kind, which cause the denizens to develop certain similarities of form, the better to navigate these fluids. The great bird is this eagle. Between its talons it grips the salmon of thunder. The tail section powers the assemblage beyond the fractious air currents of the rim for the first part of the voyage, and then detaches. The body of the salmon of thunder is segmented to allow array after array of male dragons to be induced to flame by the mirror mechanism by which each beast is shown its image in a looking-glass, whereupon its natural protective instinct impels it to flame defensively. Each segment is then discarded in turn. If crew and cargo were reduced, the bird could carry barrels of explosive powders, ephebian fire, and other instruments of war to rain terror upon enemy cities without fear of retaliation. Happily, no government would ever allow such madness, and the flights of many birds could only bring international peace and brotherhood. The lights of the anchored ships disappeared into the murk as the barge drifted on, faster now as the current began to pull. "No turning back now," said Leonard. There was a roll of thunder, and fingers of lightning walked along the edge of the world. "Just a squall, I expect," he added, as fat drops of rain thudded on the tarpaulins. "Shall we get aboard? The drag lines will keep us pointed directly at the rim, and we might as well make ourselves comfortable while we wait."
"We ought to release the fireboats first, sir," said Carrot.
"Silly me, yes," said Leonard. "I'd forget my own head if it wasn't held on with bones and skin and things." A couple of ship's boats had been sacrificed for the attempt on the circumfence. They wallowed slightly, laden as they were with spare tins of varnish, paint, and the remains of the dragon's supper. Carrot picked up a couple of lanterns and, after a couple of tries in the gusting wind, managed to light them and place them carefully according to Leonard's instructions. Then the boats were cast adrift. Freed of the drag of the barge, they pulled away in the quickening current. The rain was hammering down now.
"And now let us get aboard," said Leonard, ducking back out of the rain. "A cup of tea will do us good." "I thought we decided we couldn't have any naked flames on board, sir," said Carrot.
"I have brought along a special jug of my own devising which keeps things warm," said Leonard.
"Or cold, if you prefer. I call it the hot or cold flask."